What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
So, yeah. As you know,
right?
I have gotten very fat.
No, that is not true. in the slightest.
Well, no, that's
I think we've both put on a few pounds since the beginning of quarantine.
The quarantine thing has been hard on a lot of people, and, you know, especially, like, the middle part of me. And so I really enjoyed the other day your supportive, loving reaction when I was like, I look slim, right? Like, I'm looking good. And you were like, didn't you start, like, watching what you eat yesterday? And I was like, yes, and it is working for me.
I love your optimism.
Thank you.
I love how you're creating your reality.
Thanks.
You're speaking the truth into being.
The thing is, like, I don't need to be, like, thin for anyone. That's not something that I need. But I am growing out of my clothes. And I am so cheap. I am not going to buy new clothes. So I'm going to lose the weight I need to fit into the clothes that I have.
All right.
Especially since I haven't been able to wear those clothes for the past year.
Yeah.
Because I don't have anywhere to wear them.
I know.
Somebody, they're brand new.
Somebody online said, I miss my going out clothes, so I put them on, and they missed me too, apparently, because they hugged me real hard.
Yeah.
I'm also trying to watch what I eat, and for me that means only one can of Pringles per sitting.
I'm actually really, you have been really laid off the Doritos and the Pringles the last week or so, and I'm just really impressed with you.
Well, I've substituted cucumbers, and oh, they're so much better.
I know it. I know. The thing is, I do resent you a little bit, because you can just be like, oh, look, I'm going to stop eating this bag of chips every day and instead drink, like, a glass of water. And you're like, look, I lost 10 pounds. And me, I'm like, I've eaten nothing but salads for 16 weeks.
But you look good.
I've gained 2 pounds. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're so supportive.
And as a reward for your good behavior, I've got a story for you. January 1967. That was the month that the very first person was cryopreserved after legal death. They were the first person frozen in hopes that in the near future they could be thawed out and brought back to life.
It seems like something that would have started in the 60s, for now, sure.
That's interesting, right? I mean, that is interesting. But what makes this even more interesting is that the guy that was preserved by a TV repairman and two potheads.
No.
Among others, yes. In 1965, the Life Extension Society offered the opportunity to preserve one person free of charge, saying that the Life Extension Society, quote, now has the primitive facilities for emergency short-term freezing and storing. Doesn't really seem like quite the ad. You know, it doesn't really grab you. Not the advertising positioning statement that would woo my business, would coax dollars from my wallet.
You know, you can picture yourself on this sofa watching watching a trendy movie or... Yeah.
Picture your lifeless corpse lying on this beautiful bed of dry ice, completely bloodless and full of antifreeze. So that offer was to freeze, free of charge, the very first person who wanted to try out cryogenic suspension. Not surprisingly...
I like the first one's free offer. I mean, that's very, like, pusher man kind of... mentality.
It's like a cryogenic punch card. So there were no immediate takers.
No.
But shortly after that, there was Dr. James Bedford. He was an American psychology professor at the University of California. He wrote several books on occupational counseling. When the free offer was made, Bedford did not accept that opportunity, but later he changed his mind, and so he became the first cryo patient using his own funds. Basically, what he did was he took out a life insurance policy on himself for $100,000, and when he died, that money went to the cryogenic society, the Life Extension Society. Unfortunately for him, there were family members who didn't want him to do that, and so they fought it in court. I guess his wife and son tried to honor his will, his wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Others in the family said, no, we should have that money. So they spent most of it in court fighting it out.
That's gross.
There were some monies left. So where does the TV repairman come in?
For real.
Well, his name was Bob Nelson. He became obsessed with cryogenics and immortality. In the early 60s, he fixed TV sets. That's what he did. He was a TV repairman. But his real passion he found in the pages of Dr. Robert Ettinger's book, The Prospect of Immortality. This was a book that came out in 1962. And in it, he theorized that death was nothing more than a disease and that it could be cured.
Okay.
The idea, of course, is somebody dies of a disease, you immediately freeze them in the hopes that generations from now, maybe even centuries later, we would be able to cure these diseases or reanimate dead bodies, and they'd be thawed out and, hey, second life, woo! Tom Brady's still playing. Oh my God.
So weird.
So Nelson, the TV repair guy, became obsessed with this idea. In 1966, the Life Extension Society in Los Angeles was holding a seminar, and Bob decided to go. Nelson told This American Life, the TV show, in 2008, that when he decided to go to the first meeting of the suspended animation group, he said, quote, I remember going and thinking, I'm not going to be allowed in because I'm not a scientist. I went in and came out voted as president. So this was in 1962, and this organization, which was a nonprofit, was really just made up of people that had, they were dreamers.
They were interested.
They were interested in it. There was really no scientific involvement from, scientists. There were no medical doctors involved, no morticians, nothing. It was just a bunch of people who thought, hey, this is really cool. Nonetheless, Dr. James Bedford said, I'll give her a go. He was 73 years old and he died of kidney cancer, but not before agreeing to having his body cryogenically preserved by the, quote, experts from Cryonic Society of California. Unfortunately, Dr. Bedford died sooner than he expected, and they hadn't finished building his cryonic capsule that was being constructed in Phoenix. And so he's dead. They're about 3 weeks away from having this capsule completed, this cryonic coffin, mm-hmm. essentially. Well, you know, it's like that's what he's preserved in. That wasn't even close to being done. So
isn't Arizona where that other cryogenics lab was that had, why are all these cryogenics labs in Arizona? It is like the hottest place in the world.
Yeah, I know.
And you're freezing people. Yeah.
Alcor is the name of that company you're talking about.
Why don't they set up shop where it's cold?
Like here in Bangor, Maine. It would save on energy costs.
It's for sure. I mean, there's a reason that Google has like all of its big computer guys in a cold place. I don't remember the details of that at all, but it's because it's hot and it's the energy it takes to,
So when Dr. Bedford passed away, Nelson had no choice but to store Bedford's body on ice. And he didn't have enough ice. So he called his neighbors, who were a couple of hippie pothead types.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, sure, that's no problem. In an article from allthat'sinteresting.com, Nelson said, quote, when we froze Bedford, man had never been to the moon. There had never been a heart transplant. There were no GPSs. There was no GPS. There were no cell phones. So I just called up my neighbor and said, listen, I got a problem. I've got a frozen dead guy. And
the potheads were like, you got a problem? Yo, I'll solve it.
Check out my corpse before I dissolve it. Wait, no, that's not what he was trying to do. He was trying to do the opposite. So he got a bunch of Basically, they stored him in ice from these hippies' freezer. So Nelson took the frozen guy, put him in the back of his truck, and drove it over to his friend's house. And he said, quote, "It was crazy. I look back on it now and I think, oh, my God." So this guy, Dr. Bedford, he's just packed in ice in a freezer at a pothead's house. Finally, the cryo capsule was finished. Bedford was injected with medical grade antifreeze. Oxygen was pumped through his entire system with an apparatus that's called an iron heart. He was then placed in the capsule with dry ice. Now, Nelson's inexperience wasn't the only issue that created challenges. His organization also didn't have any money. They were often forced to freeze their subjects because there was more than one. There were like nine total that they did, but Dr. Bedford was the first. They were forced to freeze their subjects in dry ice in boxes that were lined with styrofoam, pretty much a large styrofoam beer cooler, body-sized.
Oh, man.
Now, they weren't the only organization that was interested in doing this. There were other organizations in the field of cryonics, but none of them had employed doctors or morticians. But Nelson eventually got help from a mortician. And he was the guy that injected the bodies with the right fluids and then was able to store up to three of those bodies packed in ice at his mortuary. But by 1969, he was getting uncomfortable with this process.
Sure.
So in 1970, former TV repairman turned dead guy freezer bought a large underground vault right outside of Los Angeles, and he planned to preserve bodies and store them there. There were nine total.
Okay.
Many were placed in the same capsules, and there they stayed for more than a decade.
Did they know that they were going to have shared capsules?
I think that was probably made clear.
Okay. Because I know, like, if I go to the hospital, I want a single room. You know, sure. I don't want to share a room with someone.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like a corpse hostel where you never know who your roommate's going to be.
Right.
And they probably aren't going to smell good. So the problem with Nelson wasn't just financial, but it was the biggest problem. He was always running out of money and was consistently faced with problems of replenishing the dry ice and keeping the irrigation going.
Right.
Again, at this point, it was a very primitive attempt to preserve bodies. So after the money ran out, by March 1979, Nelson locked the vault and just walked away from the venture.
No!
Inside that cemetery vault, he left nine bodies in liquid nitrogen capsules. Without any type of constant maintenance, these bodies would be left to decompose. The cemetery ultimately just covered up the entrance to the vault and denied it even existed.
Stop.
They denied having any records of it.
That's not what we do.
Now, in that same episode of This American Life, Nelson said, quote, "When I did put the lock on the vault, I was heartbroken. I went out into the desert and had a ceremony and said goodbye to these people. I did the best that I could." Not surprisingly, he and his partner, the mortician, were sued by the families for a total of $800,000. He did settle. Later on, he said the prosecution had made him look like someone who was trying to start a new religion. He said, quote, "someone trying to bring the dead back. It was a brilliant attack. I couldn't get over it."
I mean, it's kind of what was happening.
Yeah, I guess. Technically, yeah. I think, yeah. By this point, he was exhausted. He had no money left, so he literally just walked away from cryonics altogether and moved to a different location and changed his name. He wrote a book in 2014 called Freezing People is Not Easy.
Yes! Yes!
So what happened to Dr. Bedford? Well, his body ended up being moved several times over the decades before being relocated in its final destination at Alcor Life Extension Foundation.
Oh, hey!
That's where it's been since 1991. When they brought him there, in 91, they removed him from the primitive capsule that he was in and put him in a new, more modern capsule at the facility. And they said they found him to be, quote, "miraculously well-preserved, a well-developed, well-nourished man. He appeared younger than his 73 years. Now, he'd been wrapped in a sleeping bag, and that sleeping bag had frozen to his corpse. but they were able to successfully remove it without any tissue damage. He resides to this day on ice at Alcor Extension, Alcor Life Extension Foundation.
Oh, wow.
The Alcor facility holds about 150 frozen corpses, including, bum, 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 the frozen severed head of baseball legend Ted Williams. No, I did an episode on that really early
in the Box of Oddities. Yeah, I think it was like the second or third.
Yeah, there was an expose, a book that was written by one of the former employees there. He has since retracted his stories that he told in the book.
Oh.
But because, well, he was, they sued the life out of him, pretty much.
Sure.
But he said in the book that when they were transferring Ted's head from one capsule to another, they propped it up on an empty tuna can, mm-hmm. and the tuna can had frozen to his head, and so they tried to knock the tuna can off
with a wrench.
With a wrench, and pieces of his head came off.
Yeah.
Well, bits of tissue, not like skull cap or anything, just like pieces of flesh or something like that.
Just chunks of him, no big deal.
But the reason
they
had these empty tuna cans was because they had a cat there.
I remember.
And just roaming about. You know, I wonder if they kept the kitty litter thing right in there next to the frozen bodies.
I think that's probably why I remember the story. Because
there was a cat.
Cat! Can I pet him?
I got my information from Wikipedia, all things that are interesting. The program This American Life and Bob Nelson's book, Freezing People is Not Easy.
Amazing.
And now, that thing in the middle. The bicycle. It was first introduced to the public in the 19th century in Europe. But oh, it was scandalous. When it was first invented, some people worried that the ankles of female riders would be on display, and that that would distract men. So, the early designs for the bicycle had a curtain that you could draw to hide those delicate legs. If this podcast were a cookie, it would probably be chocolate chips, nuts, and little metal shavings that get caught in your tongue. Bad cookie. Bad cookie. This is The Box of Oddities. The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
We got a message on our Facebook Freaks group from Shannon. My year has been made, they wrote. Listen to Box 306 and I heard my name. I was in the car driving home after dropping off my daughter with her dad for the weekend. We had listened to the first half on the way there, so she missed it. I started screaming uncontrollably and then I called my mom. She answered the phone, all quiet and calm, and then I screamed at her like a death metal singer. Holy fucking shit, it happened. My mom, panic in her voice, what happened? Are you okay? And after I explained, she yelled at me, God damn it, Shannon, you almost gave me a fucking heart attack. Then she lightened up and we both started laughing. I had to pull over at the next exit so I could send a link to her and my daughter. Thanks, Kat and Jethro. I've been on a high all weekend and it's carried through to Yucky Monday. And thanks, Carrie Clark, for that post on the Freaks group. So much fun. Oh my gosh.
So that's twice we've mentioned Shannon's name.
Mm-hmm.
God, I hope she wasn't driving.
If she writes in again, we'll have to, it will be a never-ending cycle of Shannon.
Somebody on that thread said that they wait with great anticipation when we talk about the Freaks group because they're hoping that maybe they'll hear their comment mentioned. It was like waiting for the lottery.
There's so many good comments. You people are funny. There's no getting around it.
Unfortunately, if this was a lottery, it would be a lottery where you win nothing. What you got for me? What you got for me? What you got for me? Somebody sent us a video of their young boy, a little boy. Yeah, here it is. It's from Vicky. She said, my son and I listen to your podcast every time we're in the car. We can't leave the house until it's on. His favorite part of the podcast is What You Got For Me. And then she sent this video.
Hi, guys. Me and my mom have big fans. And I'm wondering, can you guys do a live stream again? Because if you do, I would be really happy. And that's it. What got for me?
So the pressure's on.
Yeah, well, we had intended to do another one right quick. And I've just been eating pizza.
But now that you're watching what you eat more,
it'll give
you more time for a live stream.
All right. Let's just say it. Let's just say something and creating a deadline for ourselves right now. Let's do it.
Let's say the end of March.
Okay.
All right.
Done.
The end of this month.
Done.
Sometime this month. Oh, God. I hope we can pull this off.
I'm so nervous already.
All right.
Oh, yeah. The point was, what do I have for you?
Yes, that's what I was getting to in case I wasn't making myself clear.
Okay. Puk Nam Shin was left in the care of her father after her mother died. It was the early 70s in Korea. Her dad was an alcoholic. He ran a grocery store and he had remarried. Puk Nam Shin soon had a stepsister, Yoon Suk Shin. But one night, soon after Yoon Suk was born, while their father slept, Puk Nam awoke and saw her stepmother gathering up her younger half-sister and leaving the home.
Hmm.
And they did not return. She was only about 2 at the time, and she was left alone with her father. When she was 5, Puk Nam Shin was pulled out of school by police. The officer escorted the child to his car, and they drove to a nearby train station. There, her father had stepped in front of a speeding train.
What?
Yeah.
And they took her immediately to the accident scene.
They asked her to identify the body.
Oh, my God. She was 5 years old. Oh, my God.
Yes. So, obviously, this was a terrible experience, and she freaked out and ran away. Soon, she was settled into an orphanage, and she said that she wasn't sure why the people running the orphanage had her taking care of kids and babies, but eventually she figured out that she was a little bit older than the rest of the kids, and she really found joy in helping take care of them. She said, "I loved babies so much that I really didn't mind at all." When she turned 9 in 1978, she was adopted by an American couple, and she was given a new name, Holly Hoyle O'Brien. She settled into her new home with 3 new sisters and 6 brothers in Virginia. She did have some obstacles, obviously. Language was a big one, and culture differences, as well as nightmares. Totally understandable for someone who has had so far a pretty traumatic life. One night she woke up in tears, and she came to her parents and she said, "My daddy died and I have a sister. We need to find her." This comes from AP News. So Holly's mother contacted the orphanage, and there was no record of her having a sister. And that was because the sister and the stepmother had been gone for years by the time Holly was adopted. Holly graduated. She got married. Holly's husband contacted the orphanage again just to be sure that there were no details about her family there, and the results were the same. Holly earned a CNA license in 1991, and she got a job at a nursing home in Virginia. She moved to Sarasota. She had to go through a divorce at some point, and she said she really wanted to experience new things. So she applied at Doctors Hospital in Sarasota. I feel like Doctors Hospital is a really weird and redundant name, but that's not up to me.
That's like saying Mechanics Garage.
Right. Maybe there's more to it and I just don't know. I'm sure it's a very nice hospital. Anyway, she had applied several times to Doctors Hospital in Sarasota several times. Did I just say several times twice?
You said it several times.
Oh, my God. So Doctors Hospital at this point is still hiring, and they're looking to add another employee. After a new hire kept pushing that they should, they kept looking into this other medical assistant, Megan Hughes. But there was a problem. It was minor, but it was significant as far as computer language goes. Her name had been misspelled on the paperwork that had been submitted to Doctors Hospital. So her name was M-E-A-G-A-N, and on the paperwork it said M-E-G-A-N. So there was a real holdup because of a stupid A. And it took a few weeks to figure out this issue, but eventually Megan, after an interview, she aced the audition and reported for work on March 1st, and she was assigned to the 4th floor. So Holly and Megan are now working on the same floor. They are working the same shift, 7 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., and they struck up a friendship quickly, as you will if you're working together. And, you know, one of the patients actually mentioned Megan to Holly. She said, there's another nurse around here named Megan who's from Korea, and you should talk to her because maybe you're from the same town, which I know sounds kind of nice, but in my head, it was real racist.
Well, I mean, you're from the same country. You must know.
You must know each other, right? But they did. They quickly bonded. They became friends. And as they started spending more time together, they started noticing coincidences. So yes, they were both from Korea. And yes, they both did have missing families. And yes, abandonment was listed on orphanage paperwork for both of them because yes, they had been both adopted to Americans. And then they discovered that they shared a surname.
Mm-hmm.
So here are these two women working on the same floor of the medical surgical unit of this hospital in Sarasota. And they would go to lunch together, they would meet after work, and they would compare notes on the incredible similarities of their stories. So eventually, I mean, you have to, right? Holly ordered a DNA kit from Canada, and the orphans did mouth swabs. They sent the samples back in early August, and the lab results were returned to Holly via email on August 17. She was actually on jury duty at the time, which I'm super jealous about, but let's not get into that. Turns out the match was positive. Megan Hughes was too young to remember her father, or much about her biological mother for that matter. She does have faint memories of being in a Korean orphanage, but she was adopted by an American family in 1976 and grew up in Kingston, New York. Megan's family moved to Venice in 1981, because her father was ill, and she graduated from Venice High School in Florida. Megan qualified as a certified nursing assistant in 2002. She began her career in home health care. She moved on to Sunset Lake Health and Rehabilitation Center, where she got a job as a physical therapy assistant. And that's where, in 2012, she met Matthew Nelms, who is also a CNA and a physical therapist. They became friends. They both wanted to work at Doctors Hospital in Sarasota. And it was Matthew who got a call from them first. He had actually accepted another job, and it was 6 days before he started his orientation at that job that doctors called and offered him a job. So he took the job. And before he left for work, Megan had said, "Do you think that you can get me in there?" So he said he would try. And that's what he did. He kept telling the hiring staff at Doctors Hospital that they needed to hire Megan, which is what led to her paperwork being resubmitted with her correct spelling. And that's how she got a job at Doctors Hospital.
That's amazing.
So after all of that, after these journeys from Korea into orphanages, different orphanages, to different American families in different states, they both ended up in Sarasota working at the same hospital on the same floor, and they were sisters.
That's incredible. What are the freaking odds
of that?
It's got to be astronomical.
It's unreal. And I can't imagine like the emotional roller coaster that comes with that. And knowing all of the things that could have gone differently. I mean, if her friend Matthew hadn't insisted that they keep looking at her, and if her father hadn't gotten ill in the first place, and it, you know, all these things. Anyway, I got my information from Time Magazine, The Guardian, AP, and Sarasota Herald Tribune. And that is the story of how sisters from Korea were adopted and ended up working at the same hospital in Sarasota, Florida.
I can't help but think that, you know, they're starting to get to know each other and they're like, "Hey, I like this. So do I. I'm from there. Whoa, I'm from there too. Well, what about this? I do that." And all of these things start coming together. And the first one thinks, could this possibly be? No, this can't.
My first thought would be like a single white female kind of situation. Like she was catfishing me and trying to get something from me. And I'd be like, "Okay, girl. Okay.
Back off.
Okay."
Yeah. And then you would just leave in the middle of the night and you would have missed your lost sister.
Well, at least I wouldn't be murdered behind a dumpster.
Sure, there is that. That's always a positive. But the first one, the first sister to go, you know what? We should get a DNA test. I mean, that's a pretty big leap.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be thinking, oh, the odds of this actually being true
right.
are astronomical. You probably have a better chance of winning the lottery than something like this just occurring naturally. Wow, amazing. Oh, you know what we forgot to do?
No.
Last episode, announce the winning organization for the Order of Freaks donation. Every month on Patreon, we donate 10% of all the support to an organization that the Order of Freaks vote for. And the most recent recipient is...
Girls in Tech.
And what do they do? I mean, I kind of figured it out. But
Girls in Tech is dedicated to providing career development skills and a community for women in technology fields around the world.
So we'll be sending 10% of our Patreon support money to Girls in Tech this month. If you would like to join the Order of Freaks, you can do so by going to our website, theboxofoddities.com, and signing up on Patreon.
Thank you guys so much for your support and for supporting these incredible organizations and, you know, like giving a shit. I mean, yeah. It's so easy to not give a shit, and a lot of people don't, and it's cool that you do. That's all I have to say about that.
And with that, I'll say we'll see you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you. And its fate is in your hands. The Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. On Facebook at Facebook.com/Box of Oddities Podcast. On Twitter at Box of Oddities. And Instagram at Box of Oddities Podcast. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.